I am Khalif Zephnat Anita L., one of your co-hosts, and you are in the Royal Priesthood Bible Prayer and Fellowship Room.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
There's been so many things that held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know, but we'll let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together, we're polishing up our act. And if you've ever been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down anymore.
Good evening, good evening, good evening, good evening, good evening. Again, I am Khalif Zephnat Pioneer L., and you are in the Royal Priesthood Bible Prayer and Fellowship Room. Welcome to those of you in the PBS radio audience and those of you who are in the room visiting by computer and listening in by phone. Oh, are we going to have a time tonight as we look into a critical and important subject. We have been discussing for the last several weeks procreation, or rather wealth creation, via or by through procreation. And we hope to continue that discussion tonight in the vein of the Bible and other resource materials that we're going to point out that are extra-biblical, and we are looking to have this discussion with you tonight, and we have, as always, our guest and co-host, Dr. T.J. Prince, and, of course, Dr. Daniel Mills, and Reverend Roosevelt Abbott. And we have Reverend Ernest Jackson from Ohio, and along with our special guest host, legendary and honorable Assar Imhotep, a.k.a. Hoghead, Mr. Willie Curry. So we are looking forward tonight to a great discussion, and hopefully Ms. Betty Smith will join us. She brought us some very great information a few weeks ago concerning the indigenous people of America and her ties, and as well as her knowledge back, which was very empowering. And we have to get her again on the show and give her a full hour to get loose and to talk about the wisdom that she's had and been granted as a keeper. As an indigenous wisdom keeper, we celebrate all of you again. Thank you so much for tuning in. Wow, this is a great time to be alive. Much information is coming forth, and much information is being exposed, light in areas that were previously darkened, light in areas that we could not see, information that had been suppressed and covered for many, many years, in some instances, millennials, thousands of years, information has surfaced, and all of a sudden, we're beginning to see many, many things in a very different light from what we have seen them in previous years, or the information that we had. That information now is being challenged in this Aquarian age. Our information is being challenged at many, many levels. And we're going to have a wonderful time tonight, because I don't think that the subject that we have before us tonight, there is any more important subject than the one we are discussing tonight, which is everlasting life. And I'm waiting again for a couple of our people to come in to share with us. I know they'll be here. Anthony, how are you doing down there in Georgia?
All right, brother, please. I'm here. I'm here. I'm ready to get this info and get this knowledge.
Man, look, Anthony, we're going to talk about it tonight. I'm going to leave you on open because, you know, I want your input, so your mic will be open so you can feel free to jump in, because we're going to look at the Bible tonight in a way perhaps you've not seen it before. Maybe you have. I don't know how many people have seen this truth before that I'm about to expose. I want to keep it clean. I don't want to make it obscene. And I don't want to make it offensive to people, but it's going to be really raw tonight. It's going to be a different look at some old stories that we've looked at before, and but never looked at in this vein in terms of what they really, really mean and what's really, really going on. So as the people began to check in and began to register in on this call, we're going to have a discussion. How have you been?
Everything great. Everything great. I appreciate you asking. And yourself?
Oh, I've been doing excellent. I'm engaged now. One of the young men is enrolled in our academy here, our leadership center, and he is learning. He's 24 years old. And, of course, we have a resident academy, so we're thankful for him. Rob is here with us in the house tonight, and he's learning many, many various things here at the academy and the leadership center. And he's been here with me every day for about 2 weeks now. He enrolled in the What a Quarter here. And so we're thankful for him. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing pretty good, son.
Good. You've been learning quite a bit since you've been here.
Yes, sir. Gaining plenty of knowledge right now, sir.
So he's been gaining plenty of knowledge, sir. And of course, he already had plenty of knowledge. He's learning, was learning on his own, and came to me and asked me to mentor him, Anthony. And so I enrolled him, and we have our residential leadership center here in Greenville, Mississippi. So for the last 2 weeks, he's been on site here with me every day. And, oh, man, it's just exciting to see such a young, fresh, sharp mind becoming a part of learning these truths. It really makes the journey worthwhile to see that others are learning truth. So we're going to dig right in tonight, because the subject is very, 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 very broad. And again, I want to warn you, I don't intend, it is not my intent to be offensive, obscene, or repulsive. I'll try to keep this as clean and straight as I can. But it's going to be talking about areas that we all are familiar with, but we've not looked at the Bible in this light before. Most of us haven't. At least I hadn't looked at the Bible in this light until I began to look more deeply into the truth that this principle we're going to discuss tonight was revealed to me in a different context. And that principle is... of course, eternal life. And Brother Gibson, how you doing out there tonight, man? You doing all right?
Yes, Bishop. Pastor Abbott is leaving my domain as we speak, and he will be on the line when he gets in the car.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm so happy you came in, man. I just gave an intro. I won't go back over. We're going to look at some passages that you and I have discussed over the week. Feel free to jump in when you want to, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Good to have you tonight, Bishop.
It's good to have my spiritual father to teach me tonight.
Well, I'm going to get right at it and get right with it. We're going to talk about everlasting life and the waters of everlasting life in perhaps a manner that we've never looked at them before. You remember when Jesus told the woman over in John chapter 4, in verse 13, he answered and said, "Whoever drinks of this water shall thirst," speaking of the well that where they were located there in Samaria. But verse 14 says, "But whosoever drinks of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life." And the woman, of course, as anyone would naturally do, responded by politely saying, "Sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come here to draw." Jesus said unto her something very strange, something very odd, and I want you all to hear this, to make the connection of what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about waters of everlasting life. He said, "But the waters I shall give you shall be a well of water springing up into everlasting life." And the woman accepted the invitation to drink from the water. And Jesus says to her something very strange upon her request to have this water. He said, "Go, call your husband." And I said, wow, how did I miss this? Let me revisit everlasting life in this water and see what is it really, Brother Curry, Brother Asar, Imhotep, what does everlasting life in these waters have to do with the woman's husband? Brother Asar, it's such a pleasure to have you, legendary.
Asar, thank you, sir.
Imhotep, a.k.a. Hawkhead, Mr. Willie Curry.
Yes, sir. How you doing, sir?
Good evening. I'm doing excellent, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm just getting in the house, and I've been ripping and running all day trying to make certain I got here on time. But I'm just not coming on board, so let me listen for a minute and get in the groove, so to speak, and I'll have my comment.
All right. Well, Jesus offers her eternal life, this water that contains eternal life, and she says, "Okay, I want some of this." Anyone would want to live forever. Then he says to her, "Go call your husband." And I don't want to move further than that right now, but the text is really that particular discourse that we have found in the John recording of the Gospels in the New Testament is enough to carry us, but we need to lay some other scriptures beside this to give the deeper esoteric meaning of what's really happening here. I know you've heard a lot about this in church. Those of you who have been in church or you listen to religious broadcastings or have ever sat in sessions and listened to this lesson, you probably never have heard some of the things that I'm going to tell you that are hidden right here in this text tonight. And I want to go back to a scene in the beginning to pick up with an understanding as a foundation for understanding what we have just read and what we have just heard. I want to go back to the beginning of the Bible, and that's in the creation story, when the Most High created man. He said, "Let us make man in our own image." Watch this. "And after our likeness." Okay? "And he blessed them." He created them. He created them. Verse number 27. "Man in his own image. And in the image of Elohim, God, created he him. Male and female created he them." The image of God contained both the male and female. Now, that's very critical for you to understand. foundation where we took off from, or the runway from whence we launched this flight tonight, concerning the discourse with Jesus and the woman on the well, and the woman at the well, rather, and him telling her to go and get her husband. The Most High said he created them in his, our image. And I'm doing this deliberately, using repetition as a form of getting across my point, at the risk of being redundant and repetitious. And he said to them, he blessed them, Elohim, blessed them, and said to them, the first thing that they hear, and this is what we've been talking about, wealth creation through procreation. He tells them the very first words, the very first sound to penetrate and pierce the ear, to go into the brain, and to speak into the spirit or into this being, these beings that were created in his image, was to be fruitful. Be fruitful. Now listen to that. Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. He said some other things, but the very first words are be fruitful. This is what you ought to be. You ought to be this. This is not, this is what you are. This is the Most High speaking. And as he speaks, you know, if he spoke and said, let there be light, then light was created. So he's creating in the man a desire. His words are fire. His words are power. He says, be fruitful. So as he speaks to this male and female, the first thing that he programs into the hard drive, into that spiritual, physiological, and psychological genetic makeup is an instruction that he codes into these beings he made with an instruction. It's like programming a computer with a particular instruction. He programs into them, be fruitful and multiply. They are made in his image, male and female. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment. Male and female, that's positive and negative. That's male and female, positive and negative. As we move on, we're going to see that those energies are necessary. And then the Most High speaks and programs into the being. He says, be fruitful. Being fruitful is a program that's installed. It's downloaded, uploaded, whatever term you want to use, into the man. And he tells them to be fruitful. And then you move from that story and you come in contact with something that takes place in the next chapter, chapter 2. That was chapter 1. And he places them in this garden. And in the garden, it says, this is a beautiful Oriental story now. And he planted a garden in Eastwood of Eden, and there he put the man and the woman that he had formed out of the ground and caused every tree to grow that was pleasant to the sight and good for food. And the tree of life also, there it is, tree of life, living forever. Also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. The tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. Here is a man and a woman in a garden, and they're both naked. Once you get that, I want you to let that settle in for a minute, moment. Mm-hmm. And not only are they naked, they have been downloaded with an instruction that creates the psychological, spiritual, as well as physiological instruction for them to be fruitful. We haven't defined what that means yet, but I think we all know what being fruitful means. If I stop now and just begin to take a poll throughout the audience and ask different ones, what does it mean to be fruitful? I think we all know what it means to be fruitful and what it requires of us to do in order to be fruitful. When you say so, Bishop Abbott, when you say that we would all know what it means, when he said, sound like you got a mic. And ask.
It's good now, man.
I'm going to ask Brother Marshall. My son, if I were to ask you right now, what does it mean to be fruitful? What are some of the descriptives you would give me in answering that question?
the well in order to be fruitful, the first fruit would have to come from the man in order for the man to implant his fruit in order for us to be fruitful. As far as us in our, in our reproductive system, there's no other, we can't, argue over the fact that when God says to be fruitful, that means for us to have sexual intercourse and to multiply as a people.
Oh, so now you're talking about the reproductive system. He's not talking about fruit in the sense of apples and oranges and peaches and bananas and mangoes and grapes.
No.
He's not talking about that kind of fruit, though, is he?
No, but because I'm trying to wait until you get to the point about the water and the rivers.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Well, good deal. Now we've located from brother Assad.
Yes, sir.
I hear you in the background. What are your thoughts here?
I'm thinking that when he said be fruitful and multiply, I'm thinking that he meant to be productive, to be prolific, to reproduce your own kind. I mean, reproduce things after your own kind. You know, who were made in the image of God, which was a spiritual image. We had protoplasm, if you will. But I'm thinking that when he said be fruitful and multiply, that means bring forth children of your own kind.
I think so. And then to produce fruit of one's own kind, I think is a very accurate description. And we know what must happen in order for this to occur, because we've already alluded to it. And that allusion that we made to this is found in the fact that he said male and female created he them. So now in order to be productive and to produce, it's going to require two types of energies. It's going to require the male energy, and it's going to require the female energy. Now that's just the necessary force in all of nature. Nowhere in nature is it possible to bring forth or to create without the two energies of male and female, positive and negative, if you will. But there are some things in here that's hidden so that we don't know. We know what the fruit here is, and we see this tree now of knowledge. And so I want to deal with this tree of knowledge that's in chapter 2, verse number 9. And I want to try to do it very quickly, because he says, out of the ground, and the tree of life also is in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, the tree of life and the tree of knowledge are both the same tree. This book is highly symbolic. This oriental story that we're reading is an allegorical, if you will, mythological story with a deep esoteric principle standing behind it. And if you really want to know the truth, the tree of life and the tree of good and evil are the same tree. And I'm going to try to prove that to you, because it says the tree of knowledge. Now, I want to stop just there for a moment and just tell you that we're talking about the reproductive system, and he's using symbols of being fruit. Fruit is used as a symbol or a metaphor for the seed that exists inside of the human body for it to procreate or to reproduce, as Brother Assad has said, after his own kind. How do I know this? Because in chapter 4, the Bible says, and Adam knew Eve. That word knew or know in the Hebrew language, in the language which is being spoken at this time. There's no English language at this time, people. I'm sorry to inform you that there's no English language at this time. This is not the language that's being spoken. In chapter 4, verse 1, it says, and Adam knew Eve, his wife. Watch this. And she conceived. So now this word knowing takes on a new nuance. It takes on a new nomenclature. It has a new nature to itself, because now it moves outside the scope of the definitions that we find in English to another definition that is not found in the word know in the English language, because it says, and he knew her and she conceived. Now, well, again, at the risk of being so simple and so parochial and so fundamental, at the risk of and I just want to stop, because I don't want to lose anyone with this. I just want to do a check again with my co-host
And what are we talking about here? What is being said? Y'all jump right in. Your mics are open. When it says that he knew her and she could see, what process are we speaking of? Either one of you.
Yeah, the process of, my view on that is that the process of sexual intercourse by which she conceived, I think you find in several other instances in the Bible where a man was known to have to know, or maybe a euphemism, or as you said, the language that was used at that time, and it was translated into to knew her or know her. You know, that's my view on that, is that he had consummated, if you will, the union of a man and a woman, and carried to the point to where she conceived. That's
okay.
My view.
Anthony, what do you say about that?
I can see that part. I tried to look at it on an astrological level or constellation level. I don't make that connection right now, but I see my problem. One of the things I'm thinking is, why do God? At it, why does they need us to multiply? That's one angle I'm looking at it on that end, and then I see the intercourse going on with the male and with the two, you know, male and female energies gonna produce.
Okay, all right. Well, let me grab the bishop there out of Freeport. I think he might have something here. I need to find him right quick. I had it there, and he wants to add something to this here that we're talking about. There he is. Okay. All right, your mic is open, man.
Hey, Bishop.
Yes, sir.
And he knew her. Just as you said, that's Hebrew, which is Yadaya and Janoskos, which really means deep, intimate relationship. You know, not like I know you and you know me. There is no sex there. But he was meaning a deep, intimate relationship, the male and the female, the positive and the negative. All of this is needed.
Sexual energies are coming together,
yes,
in order to create.
Yes, sir.
So we're keeping it clean. So the sexual energies between the man and the woman, I think, and the word knowing. Now, he knew her. Now, let's go back to this tree. This tree is a tree of knowing or knowledge. So what? They're in the garden. They're naked. We got this tree. Now, there's a word knowledge or knowing. They are, as you said, or yada. Yada takes us into the realm of worship, which is deep intimacy, and that can be also found in the John passage that we read earlier, where after Jesus told the woman to go get her husband, the discussion turned into worship. We worship in Jerusalem, you worship in Jerusalem, we worship in this mountain. So, but all of this is mystical, hidden language that's speaking in metaphors and speaking in parabolic symbols and mysteries, the great arcanum of the secrets and mysteries hidden from ages and generations. So now tonight we're digging at this. So this tree of knowledge, and this man and this woman who's naked in the garden, this tree of knowledge to me now has to have something to do with the sexual relationship. What would you say to that? All of you. Don't answer at the same time. I'm trying to keep it very simple. Trust me, I can go very deep with this, and I'm going to step on it in just a moment and move forward. But I wanted to make sure this foundation is firmly set. The tree of knowledge, of knowing, has something to do with the male and female sexual energies. Because so Adam knew Eve, and she conceived. He knew her. And we're talking about the tree of knowing, knowledge. So it has to do with the sexual energies of male and female. So this tree of knowledge has something to do. Would you say that so, Robert?
Yes, sir.
Can you see that?
Yes, sir.
You got anything you want to say about it? not now. Anyone else want to say anything about this?
Was the gods mixing in with the their creation? So that must mean they had the same genetic makeup.
I would say that again, Anthony.
That the gods that was making this creation in the garden, the gods must have the same genetic makeup or sexual organ makeup as the as the Adam and Eve also. They both had the same, sexual organs or energies.
Well, I like the last phrase the way you said it, rather than to anthropomorphize the creator, to give him physical body parts or whatever, so forth and et cetera. I like the last terminology that you used in terms of male and female energies coming together to create that was necessary, because it said, let us make man in our image, and then that image is exposed to us, and both the male and female are positive and negative energies, or the masculine and feminine energies inside of the Godhead. That is necessary for the creation. So now when we come to this tree of knowledge and knowing, how does this man and this woman get together and become one? How do they become one? And that is through knowledge and knowing. And the preacher has told us from Shreveport, the bishop, that this is more than just knowledge of acquaintance. This is intimacy. This is worship. They come together as one and knowing. And now what I'm saying, pointing out, that Adam knew Eve and she could see, that means she was impregnated by the coming together and knowing of the male masculine sexual energy. She's now ready to produce a child. She's now ready to procreate. And so what I'm seeing is that this tree of knowledge has something to do with the sex scene that's going on in the creation story. And we've been told to look for this tree in a garden somewhere in certain geographic locations, but I don't think this tree of knowledge has any particular geographic location other than something that is contained within the sexual expression between the coming together of the male and female sexual energies. It has something to do with the two of them coming together, because he knew her and she conceived. She could not conceive by herself, along with her feminine energy. But she conceived, meaning became impregnated with the seed, as the seed made contact with the egg and produced the zygote and the embryo that started developing inside of her uterus and inside of her womb to become a fruit of both of their bodies. So the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is something that has to do with the male and female sexual energies coming together as one unit. And since the tree of life is also, since the tree of life is also there, and I'm contending that the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil are both the same tree. I'm contending that both trees have something to do with the male and female sexual energies coming together. Now let's move on. What I want to do now is that he told him never to eat from this tree, something that he told him not to do. Now, let me move on. Having understood what knowledge is, having understood that I've said that this tree is a sexual union of the male and female energies, I want to read something to you that maybe perhaps you've never heard before in your life that's in the Bible. Now, watch this. And this is going to be problematic. I hope I don't lose you. It says, and if any man see, this is Leviticus chapter 15, I'm going to read verse 16 and verse 18. I'll skip verse 17. Verse 16 and chapter Leviticus 15, verse 16 says, if any man's seed of copulation, that means coitus, that means intercourse, that means sexual energies, if any man's seed go out from him, then he shall wash all his flesh in water and be unclean until the evening. That means the seminal essence of the aura seminalis, which is liquid sunshine, the electricity, the life force that's in him, his seed, if it goes out from him or if it is expelled from his body, if it is ejaculated, it comes away from his body. Leviticus chapter 15 and verse 16 declares that that man is unclean.
Now listen to verse 18. The woman also with whom man shall lie with seed of copulation. They both bathe themselves in water and be unclean until the evening. So now, if the man exceeds, or if he ejaculates, or if his seed is expelled from his body into a woman, that seed in that woman, now both man and woman become unclean. I didn't write it. I'm just reading it to you. I'm going to do my best to try to explain to you what this means. Now, let me jump way over to the New Testament and pick up something, and I think we are off to the races. And that's 1 John chapter 3 and verse 9. You will never hear this in a conventional, traditional study of the word. 1 John 3 and 9. Listen to this. Whosoever is born of God does not commit, and I like to write in between the word commit, original sin, but it's not in the text, but knowing how they manipulated, moved some things out of the Bible, put other things in the Bible, changed things. I want to change that. And I wrote in my Bible, the original sin is not there. I want you to know, so I'll read it again. It's not there. I'm inserting this. I'm isogeting this into the text. Whosoever is born of God, listen, does not commit sin, for his seed remains in him. And he cannot sin because he is born of God. Now, the great secret that has been withheld from the ages is this seed that is produced in every human being every month. And the book of Revelation, chapter 22, points out the fact that this seed, somebody's texting me. Okay, that's kind of interesting. All right, this seed that we're talking about, we all have this seed in us. It is produced in every person normally in every person that is every 29 days, we all get this seed. The book of Revelation talks about a tree and this tree bearing 12 manners of fruit, one each month. So again, I know my body. And trust me, you have a seed that's in you that comes once a month. Now, women should not have a problem with this because it's easier to locate in women than it is in men because they have a cycle that's on a 28, 29 day somewhere, cycle like that. But men, you got to understand that this seed that we're talking about here that is to remain in you is also a seed that develops in you on a monthly basis. Now, I'm going to skirt around that. This seed has two potentials. If this seed is ejaculated or emitted, expelled from the body, makes contact with, in a normal case, with a healthy egg in the uterus of a woman, a zygote, an embryo, a fruit is produced, and a baby will come forth in a normal gestation period of 9 months to 10 months or whatever, how according to the cycle. So you have reproduced, you created the cause of this seed. But now what I'm contending with the passages that I just read, and this is problematic, so let me slow down. I want you to hear me well, is that in order to create, you have to have the male and female sexual energies. But this seed is never to leave your body. I just read two places in the Bible where this seed, if it leaves in Leviticus, the man, he becomes unclean, and if the woman receives this seed, she becomes unclean. And stay with me here. Now, in 1 John 3 and 9, this seed has the potential to make you to become born of God if it never leaves your body. Let me read it to you again. Whosoever is born of God does not commit sin, for his seed remains in him. What seed? This seed of copulation that we read about in Leviticus. But not only does it have the property and the propensity and power to procreate, the reason this seed is never to leave your body is because of what this seed contains. It contains the electrical forces of energies that are necessary for the revitalization of all of your genes, and the great secret of the ages, the great arcana. This is why priests take vows of celibacy to say this seed and to understand the mysterious workings and processes by which the seed must go through in the body. They spend time learning what to do with this seed in order to revitalize and to regenerate their genes and their cells in their body. Now we've got a problem. We've got a problem here that's very critical, and I'm going to try to help you. I've thought about this because I know the conditioning. You're going to say, well, how were they going to procreate if the seed never left their body? If the seed never left their body, how were they going to procreate? Well, hints and shadows and the residual traces of a process prior to them having the ejaculation, having the orgasm, which I believe is the proof. You got some background noise there. Let me put you on mute there. You got just a little bit there, Bishop. I'm going to take you off. If you press star 6, I need to take you off, okay? All right. I believe that the fruit of the tree of knowledge, knowledge being the sexual relationship between the male and female energies, I believe that the forbidden fruit, now get this, is the orgasm, which is the expelling of this divine energy. According to 1 John 3:9, this seed is never to leave your body but to remain in you. According to Leviticus 15:16-18, you become unclean is the key. This seed is the key, and the orgasm is this seed to when it comes out of you, then you lose your life forces. That is the tree of the knowledge and the forbidden fruit. It's not some apple, not some pear, not some peach, not some pomegranate, not some plum, but it's the actual seed that is to never leave your body, because this seed has the potential to make you become born of God. It says, whosoever is born of God does not commit sin. His seed remains in him. Now we've got a problem. Let me help you jump this problem. And that problem is, well, how are we going to procreate then? How could we be fruitful if the man and the woman, well, let me tell you this, the shadows and the residuals of another process are hinted to in the Bible before the man and woman have the orgasm. And the man ejaculates and the woman has the orgasm. There's another process. Let me read it to you. I'm going back to the Genesis story. And the Genesis story, I want to show you how the rebirthing or the birthing process or childbearing process that we now have, that we've been conditioned into, is an altered, according to the Bible, is an altered process. It is not the original process. It is an altered process. Let me read it to you. This, when they sinned and ate and the woman had the orgasm and the man ejaculated, and then all of a sudden God says to the serpent that tempted him, we got to deal with who this serpent is, I will put enmity between you and the woman and between your seed, there it is, and her seed. He shall bruise your head and you shall bruise his heel. And to the woman he said, I will greatly, now watch this, multiply your sorrow and your conception. So the seed, sorrow, conception, the conception process has been altered, greatly multiplied. Sorrow. There is an alteration in the original childbearing process that has to do with this seed. In sorrow shall you bring forth children. So the process that we now have is not the original process for childbearing. We have an altered childbearing process. Now we get hints of what that process could be. And I don't want to have that discussion in this forum or in this context tonight, but the Bible gives us hints and shadows. It slits of light coming through the shadows and the blind on the window. If we just peek the blinds a little bit and get a little splinters of light, we can see the hint of the original childbearing process and the story of the Immaculate Conception between Mary, who has the Son of God, between Abraham, who's 100 years old, a centenarian, and his wife, 90 years old, Sarah, who are beyond the ages of menopause and andropause, post-menopausal,
post-andropause, post-cycle, and all of a sudden through a spoken word to these aged couples, they now procreate through another process that's not normal. So we have other stories in there, but I just wanted to point out those two, that they are indications of a previous process that I can't explain to you, that is based upon science, and Anthony wanted to know about the science. Well, let me give you some science. One of the science is that what we have been taught to hide and suppress and to try to not have the discussion about is before us in certain ways. When a man and a woman get married, Anthony, they go on what you call, what do they go on normally? What do men and women go on when they get married?
Honeymoon,
right. Right in front of our eyes is an instruction to us hidden in this word. We don't know where it came from, but yes, we do. It has something to do with the moon, and the moon has something to do with conception, because the moon has something to do with a woman's cycle, and the moon has something to do with the man's cycle. So, and I can explain that at another time, but just for the sake of this conversation, your seed is formed in your body every 29 and a half days when the moon is in the sign of the zodiac that you were born in. For me, it was Sagittarius. It happened yesterday on my birthday, December the 9th. My seed fell, and whenever the moon goes into the sign you were born in, your seed dropped, and it happens every 29 and a half days for everybody. So when people got married, it was their honeymoon. And in the African cultures, a boy and a girl were educated in the disciplines of how to come together as one to worship, and understanding the regulations and the processes of this seed as it is formed in their bodies and how and what it meant, and they call it the honeymoon. They call it the honeymoon for that reason. Now, having said that, I want to show you something very, very interesting. I don't want to run out of time here, and I'm getting close to my time, and I want to show you something here that you probably may have never looked at it in this light before. And this is found in Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 1. He that is wounded in the stones or has his private member cut off shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord. Now, here we're talking about the congregation of the Lord. And someone that's wounded and is talking about the male energy, he is male, masculine male energy, that is wounded in the stone. What stone does a male have? It's talking about his testes. If his testes are crushed, is the actual actual script transliterated, wounded in the stone means to have your testicles crushed. Or has his private member cut off. That means castration. Now listen to what is prohibited to such an individual. Shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord. In other words, if you have been castrated, or if you don't have the sexual energies, as Anthony said, you cannot make it into the presence of, let's see, I don't want to make this up, the congregation of the Lord. The Lord is there in all capital letters, L-O-R-D, that means Yahweh. So you cannot get to Yahweh without the sexual energy. Now, going back to what Jesus told the woman at the well, if she wanted the waters of life, if she wanted to be born again, or she wanted to live forever, if the drink of the water, he told her, hidden within that wonderful oriental story of Jesus going to this place called Samaria, stopping at a well that had some water in it. The woman comes and she asks for this water. He says, go call your husband. Now it begins to take on a different nuance, a different atmosphere, a different meaning, a different kind of nomenclature. It has a different spin on it altogether from what we've been told. Because of this one passage that prohibits anyone without the sexual energies of the masculine procreative appendages, in this case the testicles and the penis, if they are removed, forget about the actual physical appendages. Think about the sexual energies that is required, because now I'm going to the serpent And I'm going to tell you what the serpent wrapped around the tree is. No talking serpent speak. Serpent snakes do not talk. Jackasses do not talk. Horses do not fly. That is a clue that you are looking at a story. If they do, then I will pay you and pay your mortgage for 1 year or your rent for 1 year if you can find me a talking snake. And I'm saying this on national, international radio to any Christian, any theologian, any biblicist out there anywhere. If you can find me any talking snake in 3D, third-dimensional reality that can talk, or a jackass that can talk, speak and say, why did you hit me? Haven't I served you? I will pay your mortgage for two years. Snakes do not talk. We are looking at an allegory story pointing us, we're not to take it literally, but we are to look to the truth that it is pointing us to. So this serpent, that's
and that's where the water comes in.
Pardon me?
I say, and that's what.
Go ahead. Can't hear you. Are you there? Are you there?
I'm here.
Did I lose you, preacher? Anyway, I muted it. I'm sorry. I muted him out by accident. See if I can take him off mute here. Okay, I have muted you by accident. Say it again. That's where the water comes in.
I said that's where the water comes in at Bishop.
The water comes in terms of the waters in the woman. The baby is swimming in water, in the water when the water bag breaks. When Jesus comes to Nicodemus and he says to him, you must be born again, they start talking about a sex scene here. Nicodemus throws the question, but we, in our religiosity and our politeness and our culture, we try to overlook the conversation and clean it up. And when we do that, we throw away the real meaning of what's really being said. He says, can I enter my mother's womb a second time? Now, we're talking about going into the womb, we're talking about sexual relationships here. We're talking about sexual energy. Let's face it. Nicodemus is talking about sexual energy. Can I go back into my mother's womb now and be born again? And so Jesus says to him, he said, marvel not that I say unto you that you must be born again. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the spirit is spirit. Right there, you have the two birth processes. One is flesh. If you ejaculate, the seed is of the flesh. If you ejaculate, keep the seed inside of you, you are born of God. This seed is so powerful that it creates another human being with a body, with a soul, and a spirit. Think of it. Now, if this seed, if you are taught how to regulate this seed inside your temple as we were taught in the African cultures and the Indian cultures, of white tantra, in the African cultures of Mayathuna, if we were taught how to regulate this seed, we not only would become smart, we would become invincible, we would become powerful. Now, if I wanted to subdue and control the world and to hide this process so that people could not become the sons of God, be born of God, because everything produces after its own kind, then I need to hide this process to these people. And I need to keep it hidden and give them a substitute so that they will never find out the power, potential, and the propensity of this process that I'm explaining here to you tonight. Because once you understand this process, you are born of God and everything produces after its own kind. And you cannot make a slave out of a God. You cannot control a God. So if I'm in control of the system of information, if I'm in control of the religious system, if I'm in control of everything, I want to hide this marvelous, wonderful process that is factually, incontrovertibly happening inside of your body from you, that you never look inward to understand the beautiful marvels and wonders of your own majestic physiological, spiritual, and processes that happen within you. I've got to point you outside to a substitute, to something else, so that you never discover your godness. Because within this seed that we're talking about is your godness.
High
Am
priest.
I making sense? Am I making
activating,
sense?
High that's, priest. That'll be activating the pineal gland.
Yes, sir. Now, John, you're right in the next few minutes. Someone, I heard a female's voice.
And that was me, Angel Lady Love.
Hey, sister, let me get through here just for a moment because I want to get to this surfer.
Okay, because you asked for a challenge on that.
I got about 5 more minutes on the air. Just hold on.
Well, I hope that you'll be able to let me. You made a challenge just now about this, about the serpent.
I haven't gotten to the serpent just yet.
Well, I heard you say anyone that can tell you that they've heard of a talking serpent.
Oh yes. Produced, not heard.
Say it again.
Produce, bring a talking snake.
I can give you the talking snake that was of the book that we're talking about.
Well, I'm getting ready to talk about the talking snake right now.
Was that challenge still open to that?
It's still open. Let me finish, please, and then I'll come back to you. Okay.
Because I will collect.
Okay. All right. I look forward to you collecting, producing the talking snake. And remember now, in the context, I said talking snake and a talking jackass. So now, as we get back to the serpent and this tree, has something to do with knowing. The tree has something to do with the sexual energies, male and female. Now, this energy in every culture is represented by a serpent or a snake. It's represented in Persia. It's represented in the Indian culture, in Hindustan, by a serpent. It's represented in Egypt by a serpent. It's represented in China by a serpent. It's represented in the Mesopotamian by a serpent. In Sumeria, by a serpent. In Egypt, by a serpent. In Christianity, it's represented as a serpent and a tree. This is not particular to the Christian faith. Cultures much older than Christianity each have a serpent and a tree. The Babylonian Sumerian cylinders, there are tablets that show a man and a woman sitting at a tree with a serpent wrapped around or going up on either side. And even in our culture now, the medical symbol is the caduceus of two serpents going up a pole to what my brother Anthony just said, to a knob, to a pineal gland, and then there are two wings that let out. This serpent is represent, or the caduceus, or the Hermes caduceus in Greek culture, prior to this being in our Bible, Hermes Caduceus, the Bacchus, the staff of Bacchus of Egypt, the staff of Bacchus in Babylon, both have the serpent going around a pole to a pine cone. Two serpents. We see this on ambulances, and we see this in hospitals as a universal sign for healing and for medicine. These two serpents represent respectively the Ida and Pingala, the Adam and Eve in the Bible, the yin and the yang. That is what they represent, the sexual energies that never should be let out of our bodies. When two opposites come together, male and female, and through the process of ejaculation, this divine atomic energy, atom energy, made them male and female and called their names Adam or Atom, this atomic energy. Now, when the male and the female do not release this outside of their bodies, Anthony, it goes up their spine through a process. Through the pine.